Well, as we've been hearing on the news, another earthquake hit Nepal yesterday. It's a terrible thing. More death, more destruction. The Time magazine sent the acclaimed Australian photographer Adam Ferguson to Nepal the day after the first earthquake hit on the 25th of April. Now, you might remember Adam as the photographer whose portrait of the Indonesian President Joko Widodo was removed from the walls of the National Portrait Gallery in Canberra after the Indonesians executed the Bali Nine pair, Mayuran Sukumaran and Andrew Chan. Now, Adam talks about how you take images of death and devastation. He's speaking with Fiona Gruber about what he was looking for when he arrived in Nepal.
Well, what I look for in a situation like that is the humanity in the situation. I think that's it's going in, it's finding people, it's looking for the emotions, the emotional values around that story. It's not necessarily going in looking for the most dramatic stuff I can find. I think it's good to show the complexities of a situation like that, and it's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of positivity. There's a lot of hope. So it's really just getting into a space like that, trying to make sense of it, navigating my way through the landscape and trying to get a good kind of cross-section of events and emotional values attached to those events.
So what photographs did you end up taking?
I photographed in the historic areas of Kathmandu and just outside of Kathmandu, the old UNESCO sites, some of the hardest hit areas because of the architectural instability of the historic buildings. They were hit quite hard. So I went to some of those areas and kind of chronicled the landmarks which had been affected the worst. Then I meandered my way through Kathmandu and just kind of really came across buildings that had been hit hard and families that had moved into fields to stay in tents during all the aftershocks. There was a lot of aftershocks that went to the next 3 days following the earthquake. Found families that had lost relatives and were cremating the bodies of their lost relatives on the river in Nepal. So it was situations like that which reflected the kind of intensity of the event.
And how do you ask permission to take photographs of people? You can't speak the language, presumably. How do you go about it?
I worked with a translator the whole time, a Nepali person, and I very much put my trust in their ability to read the situation, and there was a few times my translator kind of gave me the nod or said stop. But it's really about the body language that you encounter with people, and you know, this thing intuitive that happens. I always try and make eye contact with the people that I'm photographing, and people, I think it's very obvious to me as a photographer whether I'm invited into somebody's personal space, and often quite an intimate space, to make pictures of their plight, or whether they'd rather that situation remain private. And there were situations in Nepal where, especially one situation on the river where families felt a bit overwhelmed by the immensity of what happened, and they didn't want people photographing their funerals. So, you know, that situations like that, I walk away with my camera. But then there was other times when families very much wanted me to witness the tragedy they'd endured and invited me into that space, so I kind of continue when I photograph and I get in very close and photograph.
Now, you've worked in India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, you worked all over Southeast Asia. How did you start out? That's what people would probably want to know. How did you get to the position of being a photographer, a photojournalist in war-torn countries?
I don't think there's one kind of orthodox path to become a photojournalist. I think all my colleagues have got there through slightly different routes. But I studied photography at the Queensland College of Art in Australia. And there I discovered kind of long format, kind of social documentary photography, and was very taken by it and knew that's what I wanted to do with my career and my life. And I just kind of took slow, steady steps. I started freelancing in Australia for some of the metropolitan newspapers. I did an internship in Paris with a very esteemed photo agency. And then when I felt like I had the base level of skills, I just moved to India. And in 2007, I did that. I landed in India with $1,500 in the bank on a one-way ticket. And I spent the next kind of 5 years there building my career as a photographer. And it wasn't all kind of Time magazine covers and and big stories to start off with. I did a lot of kind of very tedious work that paid the bills, but then gave me the income to self-fund some of my early projects. And over the years, things just grew and I developed a client base that had a belief in the kind of work that I did and never looked back.
Now, you're also embedded with the US Army in Afghanistan. And I'm really interested to know, you know, how do you work alongside people whose views you might not agree with? I don't know what your political views are, but how do you deal with being on one side, whichever side that is, when you're taking photographs?
There's never a black and white in war. No one's a clear villain and no one's a clear victim. So while I may not agree with the politics and the policy of the US or other international players in Afghanistan, I really just try and tell the story to the people in front of my camera. And that's what I've always tried to do, embedded with the US Army, the US Marines, or even the Afghan forces. It's really understanding the individual players in that and trying to make sense of their story and how they make sense of their own story in a larger context, and trying to express that the best I can to an audience.
In your career, getting into these very tense situations, has anyone ever, you know, thrown a punch at you or tried to take your camera off you? I mean, you must have been in some pretty hairy situations.
Yeah, there's been a few situations, especially in Afghanistan, where I've had soldiers, Afghan National Army soldiers or security forces, point guns at me, normally because I'm trying to go somewhere I'm not supposed to go, like I'm, you know, trying to get past security checkpoint or through some kind of blockade to the scene of some kind of, you know, bombing or something that's happening. I've had people try and take my camera away, maybe they're going to smash it. I think that's pretty normal covering sensitive issues, and it's something that I'm prepared for, and I tend to trust my intuition and know when to call it quits and walk away or when to keep pushing.
So do you think your images, heartbreaking, dramatic that they are, A, what you hope to do, and do you think that you achieve it?
What I hope to do is bring awareness to critical social issues. I think that's paramount. I think that's the only reason I exist in these spaces with a camera. I'm not naive enough to think that my images alone will change the world, but I think my images form part of a larger dialogue and narrative around, you know, political and social issues and events, which is very important. And of course, everything else that makes up that narrative is film, it's written text, it's written journalism, it's poetry, it's videography, and it's photography. So I think the combination of all these storytelling tools is important, and I think that does make a difference. I think it helps us as a society understand who we are and where we're going and how we can resolve conflict or trauma that people are experiencing, so things like natural disasters. And I think that awareness is critical.
Well, obviously, keeping your empathy must be really, really important. I mean, as well as the huge amount of drama and tension that must come with every story you do, I imagine. Now, you're in the news recently, of course, for your portrait of President Widodo,
yeah,
Joko Widodo,
correct,
who was then Jakarta governor. So, you know, from going from taking photographs of bodies and ruined buildings and soldiers, how do you go and take a photograph of someone like the president of Indonesia? How much time did you have?
I had 15 minutes with the president. They invited me to his residence quite early one morning in September last year. I kind of set up the studio in one of his spare rooms, and then he stepped under my lights for 15 minutes. It's a very different experience to photographing kind of candidly on stories, producing work that's more in the vein of photojournalism. I mean, photojournalism is really about kind of going and watching and waiting and looking for light, being there at a point in the kind of arc of people's lives where a moment happens, which articulates an event or a meaning about something broader. Whereas, you know, doing a sat portrait with somebody is really about asking someone into your space and manipulating them in that space to get an emotion out of them that you think is relevant or interesting or says something about who they are as a person. So it's a very different process.
Hey, how did you get an emotion out of Widodo, and what kind of emotion were you looking for? What did you want to draw out of him?
I was looking for something which reflected some kind of emergence. And the way I lit the portrait, I deliberately tried to reference some of the older kind of Maoist iconography that it's existed around figures like Ho Chi Minh, or even Mao himself for that matter. And I did this because I felt like Widodo was a man of the people. He's a reformist. He's the first president in Indonesia for a long time that's not from the military establishment. And I felt like this was kind of an interesting correlation to make.
So they were very striking images. And, of course, one of them appeared on Time magazine's cover. And the other one was one of the selected pictures in the National Portrait Gallery Photographic Prize. But what did you feel when the photo was taken down?
I was absolutely perplexed. I really thought in my heart that given everything that had happened between Australia and Indonesia, that would be more reason for that image to exist in a national artistic institution like the National Portrait Gallery. And I still don't really understand their decision. I think regardless of whether you liked the image or disliked the image, or whether you liked the figure or disliked the figure, being the president, I think that's the reason for it to exist. And I think the more it's disliked, the more reason a image should see it and respond to it and try and understand why they dislike that figure. So I was confused when I heard about the news that they would remove my image from the exhibition.
And you didn't feel that the argument that the public might take a hammer to it, or that it was some form of protest about the executions, wasn't a justified one?
I don't think it was a justified one. I don't think the threat of it being damaged was real. I don't think anybody in Australia would kind of take that kind of action. And if they did, I think it would be a misguided, kind of small-minded action.
Adam, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much for having me, Fiona.
Australian photographer Adam Ferguson speaking to our own Fiona Gruber. And Adam has just returned from Nepal, where he was on assignment for Time magazine. And his very imposing, very statesman-like portrait of President Widodo is still missing from the wall at the National Portrait Gallery in Canberra. But the gallery has said that it will probably reinstall the photo in a few weeks' time.